new tests, new treatments, better options. This is what today's guest, Dr. J.S. Cohn, is reporting in his book, Prostate Cancer Breakthroughs. He contends 2011 through 2020 will be a renaissance decade for prostate cancer, and it is sure to be only a part of Western medicine's transformation. Jay is known for his groundbreaking work on preventing medical side effects. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
I appreciate the invitation.
I'm going to quote from page 2 of your book. It doesn't take a war to cause... Okay, I missed it over. I'm going to quote you from page 2 in your book. It doesn't take a war to cause PTSD. Is this a good lead-in to your story?
Yes, and my personal experience as a doctor as well.
Well, after your diagnosis of prostate cancer, one of your first questions was, is there any other area of medicine that demands sheer, dire decisions with so little data? And isn't that pretty much overall the case when a cancer diagnosis comes in for someone?
Well, it's specifically aimed toward prostate cancer because as it unfolds in the book, there have been no tests that really tells us what you have and where you have it. So you're asked to make huge decisions. Should I have prostate surgery or radiation, which has all kinds of serious implications and long-term, sometimes permanent injuries to sexual functioning and bladder control. And it's so hard to make those kinds of decisions, and yet that's where the current medical model takes men so quickly. PSA levels that are high, positive biopsy, boom, surgery or radiation, and you don't even know exactly what you have and where it is and how big it is, and it just is absolutely overwhelming.
Yes, indeed, and it was interesting that I was speaking with one of my daughters, and she was helping someone organize their files and papers, and I guess he had gone through some testing regarding the prostate, and she was just aghast, literally, at, you know, all of the things that were written about, all of the risks, just as you brought up. And yet, with a cancer diagnosis, it seems like there is a strong psychological propensity to just get it out.
Just get it out. You know, the statistics are that in the 3 months after men are given a diagnosis of prostate cancer, there's a tripling of suicides and a doubling of heart attacks. And the psychology of it, which I experienced, I had two high PSA tests, which I hope we can talk about a little bit later, what that is and what it means.
Absolutely.
And then we went right to biopsy, which is now I know there's a better way, which I talk about in the book. Went right to biopsy. It found cancer. And the number of pokes of biopsy samples that showed cancer and the elevation of my PSA, they said, you must have surgery or you must have radiation. And it's just, you know, cancer, any kind of cancer, anywhere is just, you know, overwhelming to people. So when I talked about PTSD, I mean, I see that with people who have other situations that just are immediate and very quickly more kinds of decisions than you may be ready to make, and that's the point of the whole book. There are new ways that are just emerging that doctors don't tell patients about, that I did not find out from my doctors, that my doctors actually dismissed, and I went out and got them from another means and found that I didn't have nearly as bad a cancer as they thought I did, and I didn't need those extreme kinds of treatments.
Let's just cut to the chase here. You know, someone will get a diagnosis, and I want to thank you for writing this book because it's not a medical text. It's got great medical information in there, of course, but it's for every person. Anyone can read through this book, and it's not a long book, but it's very friendly as far as how you present the information. And I think by you telling your story within the pages, it can help bring someone back into, okay, I don't have to jump this second. Maybe I just take a breath and then see what's going on.
Exactly right. And that was my intention, so that, you know, men and the women who often do the reading and tell the men,
yes,
will know, you know, it starts right with, you know, what is the PSA test and why should you continue to get it despite the fact the government and the major medical associations are saying you don't have to. Crazy. Then it talks about, okay, the next, if your PSAs are high, you know, it doesn't always mean cancer. It can mean other things. My PSA was high, and my doctors overinterpreted. So that chapter warns and educates readers about, well, how do you prevent your doctors from doing that? And the whole point is to lay out step by step in very clear ways, in an easy read, 110 pages, what you need to know, the questions you need to ask, and how do you put it all together and make decisions, and what new tests are available, what new treatments you can now choose from besides the extreme ones, and how do you put it all together and make a decision with all that information. You know, in medicine, that's what we do. We get all of our data. We ask all of our questions. We do all of our tests, and then we put it all together. As I described in one of the last chapters, how do you put it all together and then make an educated, thoughtful decision about what you need to do? And you may not need to do anything. I am currently in what we call active surveillance. I found another doctor who's an expert on this, and we're using the new tests, the MRIs, the color Doppler ultrasounds. We're following the PSAs, and it's a year and a half now, and I'm doing fine, and I never did need treatment. And he told me, he said, you know, 70% likelihood you never will, but if you do, we will see it, and we're watching it, and we will intervene certainly early enough to take care of it.
Right. Well, bravo. I'm glad you had a good outcome. And as you mentioned, part of the problem when it's estimated that 70,000 men a year undergo a radical prostatectomy unnecessarily, when someone goes to a prostate doctor, this is what they do, so this is what they diagnose, and this is what they perform, and so you're not really able to get a full picture of the options. And before we, I don't want to move into all the options right now, but where are these options as far as what insurance handles?
Insurance handles a lot of them, but let me comment on the earlier part of your statement there, which is, why does the medical model at this point in time, which is continue the model they've been using for 20 years, which is toward over-aggressiveness? The reason they do that is they have such poor means of determining exactly what you have. They use statistical analysis. If your PSA is, which is normal, is up to 4, if it's over 10, you've got a severe case. If your biopsies show 3 different pieces out of 12, that's a severe case. And it's all statistical because they cannot see into the prostate. So the great fear has always been, well, we don't want to miss a man. We don't want to assume it's mild when indeed it might be severe. So they say, well, if there's any risk at all, any possibility that it might be severe and therefore lethal, we're going to do the prostatectomy, or we're going to do the radiation and remove the whole prostate or fry the whole prostate. And I understand their point of view. But now that we have tests that can tell you what you have and where you have it and where you don't have it, we don't have to shoot in the dark anymore. You know, there was a study that came out just last year. It was very interesting because when you talk to a prostate, a urologist who is a surgeon, like you said, and has a surgical point of view, if you talk to a urologist, and I talked to 4 of them, gave them all my data, and they said, no, you really, you know, you have it, probably have it everywhere. Although we only found it in one spot with your biopsies, you probably have it everywhere. Well, this study showed that out of 450 men who had surgery, when they examined their prostate glands, and did the pathology, they found that only a third of them had it all over the place. Two-thirds of them didn't really need the surgery. Another statistic is that we know now of the 200,000 men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer in the U.S. every year, 85% will get radiation or surgery, and yet only 15% need it. So we're talking about nearly 100,000 men who are getting overtreated because, again, it's going to be a very slow process until we implement all of the new technologies and make this a much smarter and more accurate process.
Yes, and this is wonderful information to be getting out to men and women. And as you mentioned, a lot of women are the ones that will start researching and helping their male friend to figure this all out. I was just struck with the question when you were talking about the statistics, you know, when they see what comes up in your test and they're going with worst case scenarios they've seen. Is that an outgrowth, do you think, of specialization? It just kind of struck me that that might be part of a problem there.
Well, specialization is part of it. Part of it is fear of missing a man, and then he dies a slow, painful death, which is the, you know, a doctor's nightmare. Part of it is the slowness of the system in adapting. For example, what I found, and again, I found this at a learned about this at a support group, not from my doctors, that now we have an MRI method that can tell you what you have in your prostate. It's one of the new methods. And up until now, you know, almost any other part of your body, your brain, your shoulder, your heart, you know, they will do MRIs before they do anything to know what you have. But the prostate is so deep into your pelvic area, it's always been very hard to get a clear view and to differentiate cancer cells from normal cells. So now that there is a new MRI, and it's only available at maybe 6 or 8 centers in America, but they're top-notch centers, you know, Mayo Clinic, for example, and I list these all in the book. Now that we have this, the problem is that the doctors are saying, well, we have some good early findings, but we need to have this confirmed. We need to have our boards of our associations look at it very deeply and then come out and support it. Well, you know, I thought to myself, I don't have time for that. I can't wait 8 years for, you know, new studies to be performed and then published and then accreditations and all. So I went ahead and was able to get an MRI. My own urologist refused to order it for me. I was able to have another doctor, my primary doctor, order it for me, and it showed exactly what I had, which was one solitary nodule, kind of small, medium in size, but it was in a very safe area of my prostate. It wasn't growing into any vital structures. It wasn't anywhere near the edge of the prostate. And with that, I thought, well, maybe it isn't as bad as it sounds. Maybe we can look at this. But this will take a long time, and that's why I wrote this book, and this is my 8th, you know, consumer, educated, health, or interested person book to this population, because I've always felt, you know, it's the people, the informed readers, the patients, who are going to start asking these questions of their doctors and pushing the doctors to take a much harder, quicker look, because if you have prostate cancer, you can't wait. I thought to myself, what's the harm? What's the harm if I get the MRI? We can always put it aside if it isn't very helpful, but what if it is helpful? And in my case, it turned out to be extremely helpful.
Yes, and obviously there is a revisionist in you. And what do you think holds the U.S. up regarding the use of new treatments? You mention in your book, for instance, the high-intensity focused ultrasound, and maybe it would be a good time right now for you just to give a brief description of what that is. But this treatment is approved in Canada, Europe, and Asia, just to mention a few places. And yet in the U.S., is anyone doing this now?
People are doing it. They're being done as part of studies to get FDA approval.
Right. I mean,
that's going to be a while. There are doctors, and I list some of them in the book, that do this ultrasound, and they'll actually have you come to their office and examine you and look at all your records and all. And if they feel you're a good candidate, they'll offer to have you go to Bermuda, Europe, Caribbean, and they have agreements with some universities and medical centers in those areas to have people come and have it done. It's one of several of the new choices. Now, ultrasound is a very interesting topic. Ultrasound is a device that bounces sound waves off of tissue, and then it forms a picture. And there is the regular ultrasound, which is used by doctors to measure the size of the man's prostate. And that's a very important test. For some reason, they don't do it initially. They should. If a man has high PSA levels, they should do the ultrasound, because one reason that a man can have elevated PSA levels is his prostate has gotten large. A large prostate has higher PSA than men with a normal 40 cc size. And again, doctors don't usually take this into consideration. Now, there's another level of ultrasound. This is called the color Doppler ultrasound. It's performed maybe by a couple dozen doctors in the U.S., but it's an adapted ultrasound that takes these sound waves and not only measures the size of your prostate, but also looks at blood flow patterns, because cancer has a higher metabolic rate than normal prostate cells. And it will show up on this color Doppler ultrasound. And when my doctor did it on me, I mean, I'm on the table and he's doing his thing, and he puts the screen in front of the table so that we can both look at it at the same time. And he points to me and says, "Look, this is the area we're concerned about. This is the area that showed up on the MRI. And this is the very same area," and then he looks all around the rest of the prostate and sees nothing. So I use this test to confirm the MRI findings, just to be sure that they were complementary. And it was very helpful in me feeling comfortable that the findings with the MRI and now the color Doppler ultrasound, I was in pretty good shape as far as, you know, the accuracy of what I was being told.
Yes, and excuse my ignorance regarding thermography. Is that something that's ever been used for prostate? It's a wonderful modality for breasts.
Yes, I don't think it is. I don't know exactly why. It may be that it's just a harder, you know, it's harder
deep
to get to the prostate than
sure
to a breast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's go into a little bit about the PSA counts and what that all is. It seems to be fairly common knowledge that if you have a high PSA count, it doesn't necessarily mean cancer. But I don't know how widespread that information is. So maybe you can just give us a little bit about PSA and counts in general. But my first question regarding that, and I hope you'll talk about it, is what is the purpose of the prostate serum antigen in the body? Why is it there in the first place?
Well, it doesn't serve a particular role. It's just released by prostate cells as their normal metabolism.
Okay.
And they release up to anywhere from very low, 0.001, up to 4 is what you should expect in a man. And when cancer cells are there, they have higher metabolic rates and they produce more PSA, and that's why the PSA can go up. And either it goes over the level of 4, or if it were low, let's say 1 or 2, it starts shooting up above. It may double or triple in a year, and that's also kind of a signal. Now, but an elevated PSA is kind of like the engine light in your car. It lights up. It tells you there's a problem, but that doesn't tell you exactly what that problem is. So the PSA elevation may mean there might be prostate cancer, but it can mean a lot of other things. It can mean an enlarged prostate. It could be a prostate where the man has had previous prostate infections or a current prostate infection. It can mean that the man was riding an exercise bike the night before and it pushes way down that in that perineal area. And men sometimes can feel the pressure on their prostates, although it goes away after they stop. They don't pay much attention, but it could elevate a PSA level. So all of these things should be considered before then moving on to biopsy. It should also be repeated just to be sure it's accurate. So if it's high, and sometimes the doctors don't repeat it, but they should, and if it's high again, the next step in the medical model is biopsy, as I experienced. But the biopsy, as it has been done and is currently done, is usually just, you know, taking pieces from different parts of the prostate. And I call that a blind biopsy because they're not really aiming at anything. But if I were to have waited and had my biopsy from Dr. Scholes, who did the color Doppler ultrasound, he could have used that color Doppler ultrasound and that area of suspicion that he pointed to, he could have aimed his biopsy needle at that specific area. And that's called a guided biopsy or a targeted biopsy, which has a great percentage, a much higher percentage of accuracy. The problem with the blind biopsy is a man could have an area of prostate cancer or several and still miss it. And then they'd want to do it again, and they want to do it again. And biopsies are usually safe, but they're not pleasant. And you can get an infection, and you can lose blood. So it's not something you want to repeat again and again. So the targeted biopsy with the color Doppler ultrasound, or now at University of Southern California, for example, they're using an MRI machine to guide them when they do the biopsy. So all of these things will add to the accuracy of how this can be done now, although not done in most places.
Yes, and do you think biopsies can leak cancer cells and spread cancer in the body?
Well, there are a few doctors who do believe that, and they try very hard not to do a biopsy. One of them is a Dr. Wheeler in, I think, Sarasota, Florida, and I had a nice long conversation with him. He's very, you know, current with all these new methods. He does feel that's possible, but the great majority of doctors do not, and even the most modern ones do not feel that's really a likely concern, especially because prostate cancer doesn't usually spread by bloodstream. It usually spreads by, you know, gradual slow growth into lymph nodes and nearby bone.
Yes, well, that's certainly a very good basic thing to know about that type of cancer, for sure. Where does one go to find out the most advanced medical innovations? And then I'd like to move into some of these more advanced techniques for treatment.
Well, there are a couple organizations. There's one called PCRI, and that's a good website, PCRI. Another is PAACTUSA.org, PCRI.org, and then PAACTUSA.org. This is a charitable organization about prostate cancer. There is the American Cancer Society. But it really isn't put together very well in any book. Most of the books that I read almost all of them, you know, they're large books and they have a whole lot of information. And the reason I wrote this book is because I thought, you know, I really want to pass along what I've learned and put it in a very concise, clear, stepwise primer for people to know what to do first, what to do second, what to do third, what questions to ask, where are all these modalities available, and any other information that would be needed for a man or a family that might be facing these issues, and even for men who decide to continue getting their PSAs, which they should do. So if it comes back high, they know what to do, they know what questions to ask, and they can prevent their doctors from, you know, getting overly aggressive with the result.
Yes. So, Jay, you certainly have done that with Prostate Cancer Breakthroughs, the title of your book. Why do you talk about 2011 to 2020 being a renaissance decade for prostate treatments?
Two reasons. One, great admiration for what women have done with breast cancer and how they've made this such a, you know, a current topic and raised awareness so much over the last couple decades. And two, the new tests that I've had and I talk about in the book and the new treatments, the ultrasound, the freezing therapy, the laser therapies, these are all going to gradually come online in the next 5 to 10 years, and this will become a much more open topic than it has been, and the way we treat it and the way we go about it will be much different and much better than it is today.
Yes, I mean, the way the equipment is becoming more and more sensitive, it can be brought out more and more in an energetic format rather than heavy-duty chemicals. What do you do personally about diet? There are so many other alternative therapies that can really help someone. Are you seeking those out on your own, or?
Well, I live in Southern California, so
say no more.
By definition, I'm a health nut, although I'm from the East Coast. But I've been a vegetarian for decades, and I swim, and I've always taken good care of myself. Theoretically, I shouldn't have prostate cancer, but there's no guarantee about anything, and people get things, especially as they get older. I'm in my late 60s. I feel great. I've got plenty of energy, but this is something that hundreds of thousands of men get. 30,000 men die a year, almost very similar to breast cancer in our statistics and our mortality. And things happen, even those of us who take very good care of themselves.
Yes, and just to get back to one of the first things we spoke about in the last minute or two here, we spoke about how there's such a strong psychological propensity initially to just get it out. And what can you share about this regarding lasting changes, perhaps in other areas of your life?
Well, I was in that mode. I mean, once I was told by, four different doctors, three I knew pretty well and trusted, and I knew they were, seriously concerned about me. I was, okay, let's do it. Let's just deal with it. I was on the surgical schedule. Fortunately, there was a three-month wait, and a man with like me with a lower-grade cancer, less aggressive cancer, could wait. And actually, that's another point of the book, which is most prostate cancers are slow-growing, so men have time to read and to learn and to get extra opinions and to get other tests to help them better decide what's going on. So myself, I feel very fortunate. I just found out about the MRI and the other things I learned just by accident from a support group. It could have gone very differently.
I appreciate all of your work, and as I stated in the intro, you've been writing about medicine for quite some time, and you've done a lot of work with preventing medical side effects, which is such an important thing. So I thank you very much for all of your work.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you for having me on your show.
J.S. Cullen, M.D., author of Prostate Cancer Breakthroughs. His website is medicationsense.com. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for our weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. For iTunes podcasting, it's Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.